Mic on. All right, there we go. How are y'all? Okay, glad to see you guys today. We're going to be in Isaiah chapter 2, verses 2 through 5 today. If you want to turn there, find it on your device. And as you do, I want to make a confession to you guys, okay? I don't love sharing the gospel sometimes, says the pastor of your church, okay? I hope this is a safe enough place for me to confess that to you guys. I just get caught up in being comfortable sometimes. I don't want to be bothered with engaging people, especially people who are potentially hostile, you know, to the truth that I want to give them. The thing that's changed my life, I don't want that, you know, so I just, because of comfort, tend to avoid that, especially since I'm an introvert, and especially since I want to rest when I get home. I don't want to have to work even more when I, you know, hit the driveway. I don't want to go share it with my neighbors or anything like that because I just avoid it. And so I avoid sharing the gospel, and sometimes I even avoid the people because I don't want to share it. And I know God might call me to that, call me Jonah, perhaps, but that's how I feel sometimes. Maybe you feel the same way. Maybe that's where you're at as you come in. Maybe you get distracted or with comfort, you know, and you don't want to take the time to share with people. Or maybe you get distracted with other things like your schedule or your kids' schedule and you don't make the time. Or maybe you get distracted with your job, excuse me, or chasing things that make you happy. You just get so distracted, you don't even want to share the gospel, right? Because it's the furthest thing from your mind. You're not even thinking about it. It's not something that you have even thought of. Or maybe it's also because you're afraid. Maybe that's where you're at today. That's not typically my excuse. It's usually because I'm selfish. Maybe for you, it's something different. Maybe you're afraid and you don't think you have the words to say. You don't think you're going to have the answers to their questions. Maybe you're afraid you're a hypocrite because you know your own heart and you don't want to, you know, seem like a double-minded person. You don't want to seem like a hypocrite, so you just don't share the gospel at all because it seems dishonest to you, perhaps. Whatever the case was for you as you came in today, we all have reasons, don't we? We all have reasons why we just don't share the good news about Jesus with other people, and yet we worship a God who cares so deeply for us that he sent somebody to share the gospel with you and me. And to even then give us the faith to believe through his Holy Spirit in our hearts, how could we not do that same thing for other people if we serve that kind of God? And that's essentially our Multiply series over these 5 weeks. 2 weeks ago, we opened the series by talking about Psalm 67. How can we keep our blessings to ourselves? Because God has blessed us, we're to bless others. What are we blessed for? To bless other people. We have to be willing to give those blessings away, both spiritual blessing and material blessing, for the sake of the mission, right? And last week, Pastor Michael did a really great job leading us through Jeremiah 29, where we saw how we're here in Roanoke to seek the welfare of our city. We need to seek a presence, the prosperity of, and the peace of our city, because as Jesus followers, we're culture leaders. And what that means is we're in this culture to lead other people back to Jesus. That's what that means. And so that's what we're here for. I loved what he said. Exiles aren't captives, they're missionaries. Man, I love that, right? They thought they were exiles because they were captive to another place, but God brought them there to be missionaries, and that's why we're here in this city. And man, today we're going to go further down that motivation rabbit trail with this lifestyle of blessing others. We're going to be in Isaiah 2 for that. Like I said, I often struggle with wanting to share the gospel. I'm sure you do too at times. So what will motivate us to do that? Well, it's really, really simple. It's here in Isaiah 2, and it's this. You ready? God can motivate us, right? I mean, that's the answer. What can motivate us to want to share? Well, God. I mean, God's presence is with us, and that will motivate us to let him work in and through us. So the main point for today, if you're taking notes, you don't want to write this down, is that God's presence is better. God's presence is better, man. It's better than what? Everything. It's literally better than anything else you could ever experience, imagine, or dream of in this world. His presence is the ultimate blessing that we can then bless other people with. His presence is the ultimate peace that comes to the city that accepts him. His presence is better than a career in your life or your sexuality and sexual identity or your friends or even your family. I mean, his presence is better than money and possessions and, shocking as it is during this season, even food, okay? His presence is better than it all. God's presence is better. So let's see what Isaiah 2 has to say about that for us. And just to give you some context before we jump into this actual scripture, Isaiah's prophecies came at a time in Israelite history when the kingdoms were split. Maybe you guys remember some of your Hebrew history from the Bible, the Old Testament, or whatever. But after King Solomon's reign, his son was not a great king. And so the kingdoms ended up splitting because there was disunity, right? And the northern tribes, they split into the northern kingdom of Israel. Judah remained with the kingship that was through the line of David. And so they had the southern kingdom of Judah. And at this time that Isaiah is writing his prophecies, he was writing when the northern kingdom of Israel had already been conquered and exiled to Assyria. So now this is the in-between times, because Judah is going to follow about 100 or so, a little bit more years later. And that's what we saw last week. If you remember Jeremiah's writing, Jeremiah's writing after Judah had then been conquered and exiled as well. So we know it's coming. But right now, Isaiah's writing in between that time. Okay, Israel's already been conquered and exiled, and now he's warning Judah, hey, if you guys don't stop what you're doing, if you don't stop the lifestyle that you're living, if you don't stop worshiping other gods, if you don't stop worshiping God wrongly, then you're going to go the same way. And there's a lot of judgment throughout Isaiah. There's a lot of judgment going on, and that's what chapter 1 is all about. But then it gets into chapter 2, and it's the first of many little glimmers of hope, is what I like to call them. There's these little shadows of what's to come, these beautiful little nuggets of hope that we can have to see that God is making a plan for his people despite their rebellion. And this is what it is here in chapter 2. So let's pick it up in chapter 2, verse 2, this first little glimmer of hope. It says, in the last days. That's always how you know there's some hope coming. In those last days, when everything's not broken anymore. In the last days, when Jesus returns. In the last days, when God restores all things, the mountain of the Lord's house will be established at the top of the mountains and will be raised above the hills. All nations will stream to it, and many peoples will come and say, come, let's go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He'll teach us about his ways so that we may walk in his paths. For instruction will go out of Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He will settle disputes among the nations and provide arbitration for many peoples. They'll beat their swords into plows and their spears into pruning knives. Nation will not take up sword against nation, and they'll never again train for war. House of Jacob, come and let's walk in the Lord's light. He's using this hope as a motivation for them, right? And this is just a small glimmer of hope, but even the smallest light can light up a dark room, right? Despite its smallness, it's such a beautiful picture of what it's going to feel like when Jesus returns to restore all things and right all the wrongs of this world. And we'll see that for Christmas as we go down that trail of reading some of even what Isaiah has to. He goes on to detail this even more, and it's a progressive revelation about how God's going to bring this sanctification, this salvation into the world for his people, not just for his people, but for all people. It goes on in Isaiah 4 and Isaiah 7. In Isaiah 9 and Isaiah 42 and Isaiah 53, all these little, we can come up for a breath of air and some hope here. That's what it looks like in Isaiah. And it starts here in chapter 2 with these general metaphors that we heard about. There's really two big ones here, the mountaintop and God's house, the house of Jacob. And through these general metaphors, we start to see how this hope is going to come into the world. Both are metaphors for a longing that's within each of us. You know, if we're honest, we see how we long for these two things. A longing for satisfaction, a longing for joy, a longing for fulfillment. It's a longing for God's salvation is really what Isaiah is teaching us here. Even if we don't realize that's what it is, because he's saying God's presence is better. That's what we're longing for. So let's start with the first thing, the mountaintop. Let's start with that metaphor. I like using this language when we have our starting point event. When we host this for our new folks that are just coming around, I use this language to describe our vision and our mission here because I love what it evokes for us. We want to be a people that Jesus has given rest so that we can then pass that rest on to others as they are climbing around the mountain trying to get to this mountaintop experience. We've been to the mountaintop if we know God, and so we want to go back down the mountain after others. So I love that language. And it's not just a rest that they're looking for anywhere, right? They're not just looking for rest, random rest. They're looking for the rest at the top of the mountain. That's what every climber wants. If you're climbing a mountain, what are you trying to do? You're trying to get to the top. And that's where you can rest. You don't rest until, you might take small rests on the way up, but you don't stop and camp on the side of the mountain and then go back down. You're trying to get to the top. That's the rest you're looking for. And so that's the language that we like to use around here. It's like we're all climbers on the side of this great mountain called life, and everybody's trying to reach that mountaintop experience of rest, satisfaction, and joy. And the goal of all humans is that we want to feel that fulfillment. We want to feel that love and that safety and that comfort. That's the mountaintop that we're all living for. And the problem is, what we often think is the mountaintop isn't. If we try to get to the mountaintop on our own, we end up getting to these false summits, is what it's called in the climbing world. You know, we think we've gotten to the top, but we're actually on this little foothill somewhere, just wandering around on our own, nowhere near the actual peak. And this happens when you chase after things that you think are going to make you happy in your life, and they just never will. Now, let me just be Uncle Carter here for a second, okay? You might be chasing after something in your life right now that you think is making you happy, and it's just not going to. I just want to offer you a little bit of advice, because either you haven't lived long enough to experience that, or you're just totally rejecting the reality of it. And you just keep chasing after it, hoping that it'll make you happy, but I promise you, it never will. It can't. You're looking for something that thing, whatever it is, that person, that money, that whatever it is, it cannot provide you. You just will never be happy. And I've used this story before because I find it personally compelling, but I'll give you an example. A guy named Beckett Cook was a once famous Hollywood set designer that you've probably never heard of. And it's because Hollywood has blacklisted him for his change of affection. He was living for the American dream. He lived the life, man. And he found that it was completely empty once he got to the top, the way that people define it and the way that he thought he defined it. See, I got this from an article. Let me quote this interview to you that I found recently. Beckett was more successful than ever working as a Hollywood production designer. He's quoted. He said, "I was doing covers for Vogue, for Harper's Bazaar. I worked with a lot of pop stars like Katy Perry and Paris Hilton and Oprah. Like everyone you can imagine, I worked with them. And I also started my own men's fashion line. His life was seemingly perfect. His clothes were selling in all major markets, and he was going to all the fashion shows and after parties. One night in Paris, it all came crashing down." Cook said, "I was kind of looking out over the crowd, and it just struck me so profoundly. I was like, is this all there is to life? Just going to parties for the rest of my life, is that all? Is this what it's all about? I really started to panic that night. I was overwhelmed with a sense of emptiness." And what's so funny is that people will look in at that and think, yeah, he just didn't get what he wanted, right? He needed more. I'm telling you, he was at the top, okay? All the money you could ever want, all the relationship fulfillment you could ever want, everything you could ever want, accolades, people were loving him, all of this. He was a celebrated hero in the culture. Empty. He was empty. So you're right, though. You could chase after your thing if you think it'll make you happy, though, right? Let's not be naive here, guys. Let's see, when you're chasing after something that's not God, not eternal, it will not make you happy. Maybe I find Cook's story so compelling because it's just a little, it's mine, but maybe in a smaller way, right? I was never a Hollywood set designer or anything like that, but I chased after the American dream, man. I wanted the thing. I wanted all the things, as they say today. I chased after all of that. Chased after girls and satisfaction through pleasure and all of these different things. And guess what? I got some of it. I got most of it. What I was looking for, I got there. And when I got there, I found emptiness as well. It didn't give me what I wanted, what I needed. It didn't give it to me, and that's going to happen to all of us. So while we're all climbers on the side of the mountain of life, we're really lost climbers on the side of this mountain because we're never able to find our way to the top on our own. Our propensity is to put our hope in these little foothills. And God wants us to stand on the peak. He wants us to be satisfied and fulfilled. He wants that for our lives. God's presence is better. His mountain rises above all the other hills, it says here in Isaiah 2, right? Which is no doubt for Isaiah a reference to the Roman and Greek gods of his time. God's presence is high above any idols, above any little g gods that you could ever imagine or chase after in your life. He's greater than your college major god that you might be chasing after. He's greater than your job god that you might be chasing after. He's greater than a desire for a spouse or a family or children or a desire for more money or for more comfort or for power or whatever it is that you're chasing after. He's greater than that. His presence is better. Isaiah is saying that we're really longing to know
and be known by this God who created us. And if we're ever going to get there, we have to be shown the way. That's what it means in verse 3 when it says instruction will go out from Zion and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. How do we get this knowledge? How can we get this present? How do we get the experience? Well, it's through the Zion that's here. The word coming through this city. This information about God and the message from him come from his holy city, his holy people. That's what Zion is. Zion is God's people, and the message from God is his word to us, God's revelation, the Bible, his word to us. And if you just think about your own story, that's how you started following Jesus, right? If you're a believer here today and you say you follow Jesus, somebody who is already a part of this city, eternal city, they shared the good news. They shared God's message with you. And that's how you believed. That's what happens. A citizen of the eternal city will share it with somebody who's not a citizen, and that person will either believe it or reject it. They'll either come into the city with them or they'll leave and turn around and go the other way. And that's how God works. And I want you to write this down. I want you to see this from this. God's presence is with his people. So his presence is better, and it's with his people. It's the most satisfying thing, the most fulfilling thing, his presence for every human being on the earth, and it's with us if we've entered into that city. He's so with his people that the rest of the nations of the world have to come to know his people if they want to come to know God. Let me put it that way. That's pretty profound if you think about it, right? The house of Jacob, the city that's on a hill here, because we're where God and his word dwell. I mean, it's just mind-baffling. Like Pastor Michael said last week, we're to be this holy city within the city of Babylon. All Christians everywhere are that figurative city on a hill. This is what Jesus said in his Sermon on the Mount from Matthew chapter 5. You are the light of the world. You're the light of the world. A city situated on a hill cannot be hidden. No one lights a lamp and puts it under a basket. I won't start singing for you guys. But rather on a lampstand, and it gives light for all who are in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Man, God's presence is better, and his presence is with his people. So if the rest of the nations are going to know God and give him glory, they got to see the glory through us. That's how they're going to catch the glimpse of his glory in this world, is through you and me living it out on mission every day. Because the word glory here gets at that idea of ultimate satisfaction. That's what glory is, right? We all want glory. That's good. That's a good and right thing that we want that glory. God has placed that longing in our heart for glory. But like we talked about a few weeks ago, we're all glory stealers. We don't want the glory God's giving us. We want to create our own glory, right? We want that glory for ourselves. We don't want to glorify God. We want to glorify ourselves. And that's actually what religion looks like. You know, I find it very important that I preach against religiosity in our cultural context. That's what being a country club church actually looks like. It's becoming this city on a hill so that we can keep everybody else out and lift ourselves up above the rest like we're superior to other people. And that's not what we're about here. We're not about superiority. It's not believing the right things, doing the right things, saying the right things. That's not it. God's presence is better than any amount of religion. How can we dare steal that glory from God, our Heavenly Father who loves us and has saved us? We're meant to reflect that glory to others. Just like the moon reflects the light of the sun, like a mirror reflects the real thing, we're supposed to reflect God's glory and his presence to the world. Specifically, or maybe broadly, every nation, every peoples, every ethnic group, so that they will experience his glory now and into eternity through us. This is why we take international missions so seriously as a church. We partner with missionaries in Africa and the Middle East and even right here in the United States to reach unreached people groups who have no access to the gospel at all. Somebody has to intentionally take the gospel to them or they're not going to hear it at all. So we want to be a church that sends people into those contexts, but we also want to be a church that goes. And so let me just make a call for you. Maybe you need to go on mission somewhere and take your life and move it, move the glory that's with you to another nation that has no experience of that glory. Maybe you should consider international missions because God's presence is better, and there are over 6,000 people groups in this world right now across the world who have no access to that glory. in that presence. Certainly, they haven't experienced it. Maybe that touches your heart in a specific way. You need to come talk to me or Pastor Michael after this, and we'll talk through that for you. But this is also why we want to pursue diversity as a church as best we can. Listen, I know we're not perfect on this, okay? But the gospel is for all peoples. We're trying to be as intentional as we possibly can be for everyone here, not just a majority culture. And listen, we got to balance wisdom with compassion in that, and that's hard. It's so hard to do, and I'm not doing it perfectly, but I'm trying, and I hope you'll try with me in that. I hope we'll show grace to one another in this process of trying to seek unity in diversity. It's hard. It's just a hard thing. The Hill Church, the Hill is a church that we partner with. We have our offices there. I love Charles, the pastor there. He's a great guy. He said that if you pursue diversity, guess what's going to have to happen? And this is one of their cultural, you know, sayings that they have as a church. Everybody has to be uncomfortable. Can you imagine if we had that here as a principle for us? Everybody has to be uncomfortable. That's hard. But man, maybe it's worth it because the gospel's for all people. So we're unified around this mission together. And that's ultimately why we make so much of the mission here. And that's ultimately why we make so much of the mission for you individually as well. We say it like this: every member is a missionary because we're all sent on this mission. Everybody who knows God can and should introduce others to him because God's presence is better and his presence was with us. So we have the responsibility and the joy and the privilege of inviting others in. We want to be disciples, who make more disciples. That's multiplication. It's what we want to see here. It's my desperate prayer for our church. You can go back and listen to our sermons from Abraham's life out of Genesis. You can go back even further from the year before with Genesis 4 through 11, because this actually was God's plan of salvation for the world all along. This is what it details out for us throughout the Old Testament. There's this family lineage that God has set apart in order to bring other people back up the mountain to his presence. And so this is the second metaphor that we see. We've seen the mountaintop, and we'll still keep talking about it a little bit in Isaiah 2, but the second metaphor is God's house. And so you can write that down as just a heading for yourself. God's people are God's house. That's what he says here. God's people are the city, Zion. We're the house of Jacob. That's familial language. He says, again, all nations will stream to it. And many peoples will come and say, come, let's go up the mountain of the Lord to the house of the God of Jacob. He'll teach us about his ways so that we may walk in his paths for instruction. We'll go out of what? Zion. And the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. So it's really like we're sure, just to go back to the mountain, I know it's just hard. The Bible does this, okay? He gives two. So bear with me as I interweave the metaphors. But it's like we're Sherpas on the side of Mount Everest. Or excuse me, it's like there are Sherpas on the side of Mount Everest. You guys probably have heard this if you've read anything about Mount Everest or you've seen any documentaries. The Sherpa people are those people that are from that region. And they are built, uniquely made and designed, I would argue, by God, to lead other people up the highest of mountains, the highest mountains in the world. That's what they do. That's where they're from. That's where they live. They live and breathe this. And so what they've done over generations is going back to a long, long time ago is they've started taking other people up the mountain with them. Yeah. And they've taken so many people up the mountain with them that now if you go to Everest base camp, you see so many. I mean, it's a microcosm of the world. There are nationalities from everywhere, and some of those people who are guides taking people up the mountain now, they've been around the Sherpas so much, and the Sherpas have helped them so much that they're now taking people up the mountain. And guys, that's us. We're those people that have been brought up the mountain by somebody else, and now we get to do that with others. God's given us the same kind of role as we enter into his presence. We've been to the mountaintop through no merit of our own, and now we're tasked with bringing other people into his presence, like beggars who found bread, want to share it with other beggars, like lost climbers who found the path to the top, and we want to bring other lost climbers up with us, but to be consistent with the house metaphor, like orphans who found a family. And we want to bring other people into that family with us, other orphans with us. We want them to know the love. We want them to know the satisfaction. One way the Bible talks about it is that we're grafted into God's family. That's how Romans 11 talks about it. So let's switch metaphors again. All right, stick with me. Talk about some plants for a second. When you graft two plants together, you cut off a branch or a shoot
of one, and then you cut a slit in the trunk of another, and you place the two, you place the branch in that slit, and then you tie it together very tightly, and over time they grow together so that that thing that's been grafted in grows to be a part of the trunk of whatever it is that it's been grafted into. And over time, you really can't distinguish the two differences until it's time for the harvest and you see what fruit's produced from which branch. It's really kind of cool. The reason people will do this is to make plants hardier or to bring them together to create a more diverse crop or a more full yield. They'll graft two of the same plant together. They'll graft two different plants together, whatever the case is. Gardeners can do this. Planters do this a lot. You can do it at home. But I just read about this artist who's done it for installations all over the country. And you're like, an artist? Yeah, it's really interesting. His creation, he calls it the Tree of 40 Fruits. And he's done this in multiple places all over the United States where he's grafted 40 different types of fruit branches together to create this incredibly diverse tree of fruits. I put a picture up here for you so you can see it. It's just beautiful. Some of these, they're not to fruition yet, right? This takes a long time. It's hard. It's challenging. It takes time, intentionality. And this is one of the more full trees, and there's others out there that are just in their infant stages, but it's just beautiful if you see the color, the mix of blossoms and the fragrances that are there. It produces plums and apricots and nectarines and peaches, even almonds. And it's just this beautiful diversity. It's such a great picture of what God has done through Jesus in the church. That's what happens if we believe in him. If we trust in what he's done in the gospel, we're grafted into God's family like this. Jesus is the vine, we're the branches. We're grafted into him to have a more fulfilled life, to produce more fruit now and into eternity. Isaiah hints at this in just a few chapters later. He actually uses this language of plants and yield and fruit. Listen to what he says in chapter 4. On that day, the branch of the Lord will be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the land will be the pride and glory of Israel's survivors. Whoever remains in Zion, whoever remains in the people of God, whoever's left in Jerusalem will be called holy. All in Jerusalem, written in the book of life. When the Lord has washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion and cleansed the blood guilt from the heart of Jerusalem by a spirit of judgment and a spirit of burning. See, we are grafted in, we're the branch, but guess who is the greater branch for us? Jesus, he's the shoot, he's the branch that we're grafted into. We can put our trust in him. That's where we draw our life from. He's the greater city on a hill with a perfect light and a perfect glory from God the Father to the world. He's the greater house of Jacob. He's the perfect dwelling place for both God and man to dwell together as a family. He's the Word of God incarnate. We carry the message. He is the message, right? And he's the true temple where God's complete glory and presence dwells on the earth. And he gives that all to us when we believe in him. Can you imagine that? He gives it to us because of what Jesus has done. Let me switch back to the mountaintop metaphor real quick to make this point. Jesus is the pathway to the mountaintop. He's the way to get there. He's the way to this glory because he is the embodiment of the glory himself, right? He's the way, the truth, the life, John 14 says. Nobody can get to the Father. Nobody can get to the mountaintop. Nobody can get to the glory and the satisfaction and the truth except by Jesus. So if you're here today and you never have believed in Jesus, man, believe in him today. Be satisfied. Come to the mountaintop. Do that today. He's the way to true and lasting fulfillment and joy and satisfaction. He's the pathway to the top. And somebody either brought you here today or they shared this with you online. Maybe you're listening to it, watching it online. I don't know. Somebody shared this with you because they want you to come with them. I mean, at least listen to what they have to say. Believe in Jesus today, even if you're there right now. Do that. We keep thinking that we're going to find our own way to the top, and I promise you, you never will. What you're doing is actually rejecting the only way to get that satisfaction. You're rejecting the only way to get that glory and that fulfillment by rejecting Jesus. See, Jesus' perfect life, the way he lived the way that we were always meant to live, but we don't. And his death on a cross in our place, that enables us to now enter God's presence because we deserve death for our rebellion. We've rejected an eternal God and we deserve eternal punishment for that. That's just what it is for us. We have to come to grips with that. We deserve death for being glory stealers. We want the glory. God deserves the glory if he really is this king of the mountain, if he really is this powerful and this glorious.
We tried to steal that and we deserve death, and yet Jesus has taken that death from us if we'll simply believe in him. We can have peace with God and with each other as a result of believing in Jesus. That's what it says in verse 4. That's the picture for us in Isaiah 2, verse 4, the imagery of taking weapons of war and violently turning them into weapons of peace and prosperity and beauty. And that's the violent grace that we talked about in the Esther series a few months ago. Jesus went to war with our rebellion so that we can be at peace with him. Let me end with this kind of thing before I'm going to give two application points, but I want to end by reading you Isaiah chapter 6, because this is the glory of the Lord that we're talking about here at the top of the mountain. Isaiah gives another glimpse of hope in chapter 6. It's this picture of God's majesty. It says in chapter 6, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord seated on a high and lofty throne, and the hem of his robe filled the temple. Can you just imagine the vision that he's seeing here? He's seeing the God, the King of the universe, high and lifted up, so overwhelmingly powerful and wealthy and majestic that just the train of his robe, that part of his robe that drags along the ground, that whole thing that's just dragging, it fills the temple that Isaiah is seeing in this vision. And he says the seraphim were standing above him, these weird creatures. They each had six wings. And with two, they covered their faces. With two, they covered their feet. And with two, they flew. And one called to another, holy, holy, holy is the Lord of armies. His glory fills the whole earth. The foundations of the doorways shook at the sound of their voices, and the temple was filled with smoke. And then I said, woe is me, for I'm ruined, because I'm a man of unclean lips and live among a people of unclean lips, and because my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of armies. See, Isaiah saw this majesty of God, the glory of the one true God, and he was ruined. He wanted to die because it was too great for him, and he couldn't stand until one of the seraphim flew to me, he says, and in his hand was a glowing coal that he'd taken from the altar with tongs, and he touched my mouth with it and said, now that this has touched your lips, your iniquity is removed and your sin is atoned for. And then I heard a voice, the voice of the Lord, asking, who will I send and who will go for us? And I can imagine him just raising his hand and going, here I am. Send me. Right? Guys, I want you to know that seeing God's glory, experiencing his presence in your life is that thing, the only thing that can get you to raise your hand and say, here am I, send me. We are the very presence of God on earth right now through his Holy Spirit in us. The only way other people will experience that is by coming to us. We have to share this message of truth. We have to share Jesus, God's presence on the earth. We have to share it with the world or they won't hear it. God's presence is better and his presence is with his people. So we have that responsibility and the joy of doing that. So let me give you two big takeaways for today. I could apply this in so many ways. We've already talked about being a missionary. Maybe that's you. Maybe you need to go to the nations, but let me apply it in another way. First, this is the low bar, okay? So let me just say that. The lowest possible bar, the lowest possible application for you today is just invite somebody to our Christmas service. Man, we're going to share the gospel on Christmas, December 23rd. Invite somebody to that. It's the easiest thing to do. People are way more likely to come to a Christmas service than any other time of year for church. People are friendly to the gospel. I read an article this week that just argued that the non-Christians of our nation love to celebrate Christmas. They'll come. If you say, hey, man, we're going to have s'mores here. We're going to have a fun time. Christmas carols. We're going to sing. There's going to be a short message about why we have Christmas and why we celebrate Christmas. People would love to come. That's the low bar for you guys. Invite people. That's why we have these inviter cards on your seat. Man, take these with you. Invite. So our family, I counted it up, and we are committed to inviting at least 20 people between the five of us, me, my wife, and my kids. We're going to invite our neighbors. We're going to invite people who the kids are excited to invite their friends. We're going to invite some of my friends and family, some of Tamara's friends and family. We're going to do that because we want people to come to God's presence. I'm starting to learn to want other people to come into the glory of God like I've seen it and experienced it and tasted it, not just for myself, but for them. So guys, invite. We could totally do that. That's the lowest possible bar. But the second thing that I want to give for you today, the second takeaway that's a little harder, is I want you to go home with this commitment card.
should have it on your seat if you didn't get a few weeks ago. And I want you to pray about this because listen, if this is not your church home, you wouldn't say that this is your church family, then you don't have to worry about this. I don't want you to give. If it makes you uncomfortable, you can give somewhere else. I said that 2 weeks ago. But for those of us who are on mission together, we want to see this multiplication happen. We want to see the glory of God revealed to our city and to the world through this church. Then I'm asking you to commit to give to this because listen, this is a financial offering for Christmas. We want to raise $60,000 so that we can mobilize people next year in 2023. And even though it's financial though, our heart is where our treasure is. Wherever it is that we put our treasure, that's where our heart will follow. So this is a symbolic thing for us as a church. Are we willing to lay down our entire lives to see multiplication happen? And our family has talked about this. We're going to give at least double, if not more, this season. So the ask is that you would consider giving double what you normally give for the month of December. And some of you guys need to give more than double because God has blessed you with that. You haven't just been blessed with the gospel. You've been blessed with material resources and possessions and monies and all these different things that can fuel the mission. And you need to consider and pray over and wrestle with what God is calling you to give. And so I would ask that you take this home with you and pray over it. Ask God, write that amount down here, and we're going to bring it back next week and commit together. Lay it at the altar that we have, right? The symbolic altar that we have. And tell God that we're willing to give up our whole lives. But this is just but an offering to him to see multiplication happen. So make sure that you're here next week for Commitment Sunday, December 11th. That's an important moment in the life of our church going forward. Are we on the same mission together? Guys, God's presence is better. And his presence is with you and with me. Let's take that to our city and to the world. Let me pray.